welcome back to another episode here at the Damage Report. Another week, in fact, at the Damage Report of me, what's left of America, a big, echoey, I'm saying likely haunted building at this point, and Francesca Fiorentini, who's going to once again help us greet the week. How's it going?
Top of the Monday to you, John. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good. I feel like, is my shot brighter? Can we go back to me? Why is it so bright all of a sudden? I didn't do anything to the lights. It feels ridiculously bright.
You're in a studio. Outside,
I know, but it's the same studio. And the thing is, that's really weird about it is that like the shot's getting brighter as everything in the future looks darker, including the debate, which comes up tomorrow night, the first of several debates, or maybe the only one, depending on what happens. Maybe they'll just cancel the rest, but we're going to be doing live coverage of that, which everyone should definitely tune into. Cenk Uygur, Anna Kasparian, and myself tomorrow night. We're going to be doing a live commentary and mostly drinking slash holding our breath in anticipation of what's going to come. But I'm very glad to have you here. Obviously, another big news weekend. Maybe not quite as big as the passing of RBG, but it's really been something. How was the Bituation Room this weekend, Francesca?
Oh, it was great. Yeah, no, we spent a solid 5 minutes just screaming about taxes. I spent a lot of time thinking about my taxes, and I was like, why? Wow, and it was great. We had Josh Fox, who does Staying Home with Josh Fox, and Jenny Yang, awesome comic. So yeah, watch or listen to the Bituation Room podcast.
Yeah, you know, I want to say something quick about taxes before we get into what's probably going to be 40 minutes of talking about taxes.
Of course.
One of the things that's frustrating about taxes is my taxes are probably not nearly as complex as a lot of people, but because like I had my own Twitch channel and at one point this channel used to be like my personal financial channel or whatever. It's not anymore, but that made it a little bit more complicated back in the day. And so somehow, apparently, I found out while doing my taxes for this year that I hadn't finished my taxes for 2017 or something like that, which I find impossible to imagine. Because if you get even small refunds each year, who doesn't know that that's happened or not? But anyway, so they send me a bill saying I owe taxes, which is far more than Donald Trump paid. So that's an extra little bit of salt in the wound.
Oh yeah.
But the fascinating thing about how you pay these back taxes is it's like you owe X dollars. Log on to this website to pay it or whatever. So you go on and it says, which of these five categories are you paying for? None of them match anything on the bill. But once you go into it, it's not like it tells you what you owe and then you pay it. It's just like, what would you like to pay? No, you tell me what I owe. I'm taking a crapshoot on if I even got the right category. And you want me to just launch money into the ether? Like, no, you should know how much I owe. You seem to, you mailed me about it. So
why don't you talk to our third party provider who's been, you know, from the Bush dynasty has generously provided this for their tax write-offs. They will help you figure out how much you owe the government. No, it's all depressing. Yes, $750. I don't know who pays that. Who pays anyway? We'll talk about it.
Yeah, we will talk about it, and we're gonna talk about it actually in just a minute. But everybody who is here, feel free to hit that like button. If you share frustrations with paying taxes, please hit the like button. Share the stream. I can see that there is a hype train going on Twitch. Thank you to Irieman for your bits donations. We're already at level 2. Thank you for everyone for doing that. Just, you know, if you want people to join us as we spiral downward, let people know that the stream is active and we'll be chatting along and responding to everything that you have to say as we go. And with that, there is so much. Chris says in the YouTube chat, John, you should have gone on the Bituation Room. I've been on the Bituation Room multiple times and had a very good time about it. And hopefully soon I will again. Great. That said, we've got a lot to talk about. And if we're good by the end of the show, if there's time, I will finally have an excuse to talk about The Rock on the show. So I'm personally looking forward to that. You might not be, but it's my show. So whatevs. Anyway, with that, why don't we launch into the big news of the weekend, what would be in a normal year, the biggest news. We'll see if it lasts to Wednesday. Massive New York Times bombshell. They got his taxes. At long last, they got his taxes, or at least some of them. A good number of years were acquired by multiple reporters at the New York Times, and they have revealed a ton about Donald Trump. both in terms of how he's shirked his obligation to actually contribute something to the country that has given him so much. And by given, I mean literally given him so much, as well as a bunch of activity that's either arguably criminal or clearly criminal. Let's headline it though. Donald J. Trump paid $750 in federal income taxes the year he won the presidency, 2016. In his first year in the White House, he paid another $750 in federal income taxes. Over a 2-year period, he paid about the MSRP of the new Microsoft Surface Book, a smartphone, 2 years. Now, we don't have 2018, 2019, we don't know about all that, but we got a lot of other numbers. But that's the first part, Francesca. Almost no federal income taxes paid.
Mamma mia, my Italian side comes out. I'm angry. I immediately was like, look, we're in a pandemic. There are tens of millions of people out of work, on unemployment, lacking healthcare, facing eviction. Don't ever talk to me ever again about paying rent, about how students, you know, really, really should pay their loans down despite their, you know, overpriced education and their BS loans, right? That only increase every year. Like, don't talk to me about, well, you know, I mean, like landlords really deserve. No, none of it. Like, it's hitting real hard. Everything in 2020 is hitting hard. But Trump's tax returns right now are hitting incredibly hard in this dire moment that we're in. And I think it brings up the fact that ultimately, and we'll talk about how it is a grift, but wealth is truly a grift. And whether or not, and there are legal and there are illicit parts of this reporting, whether or not it was legal, because a lot of people are like, whatever, that's just what the rich do, you know, you get access to that. Yeah, is that right? Is it right? Like, let's say everything was above board, which it's not. But is it right to be able to pay that little in taxes? Is it right to be able to pay probably the same amount, if not less, than what a freelancer, less than what a freelancer who definitely didn't make six figures and really made a lot less than she spent last year, my God, paid in 2019? Like, or you know, a fast food employee, you know, any working class person is paying more than $750. Yeah. A teacher is paying more than $750 in taxes.
Yeah, and that's gonna be pointed out in an ad we play a little bit later. I don't have my documentation going back this many years, but my first real job that I don't remember for sure if I was paid under the table or not. But anyway, when I was a busboy at Tartaglia's Italian restaurant in Bridgeport, Connecticut, they had great focaccia, they did. I have a feeling I paid more in federal income taxes than Donald Trump. So now I know many people will say, like you alluded to, what's the difference? The rich do that, it's not gonna matter. Here's the thing, maybe the rich get to dodge as many taxes as they want. That's the cake. The icing on the cake is your apathy in regard to that system. And I'm not ready to be icing, okay? And I would argue that there's a lot here that looks like it's definitely not just normal rich tax avoidance. Let's go through another couple parts of this. So first is let's touch base with America first. Donald Trump's just way of living. So in 2017, the president's 750 contribution to the operations of the US government was dwarfed by the $16,000 he or his companies paid in Panama, $145,000 they paid in India, and $156,000 they paid in the Philippines. So let's say America fourth at most. And by the way, like we point out the 750 because, and maybe this is true for you too, the 750 seems worse somehow than zero when you're a millionaire. Like zero we're used to. 750 is worse, but if you disagree, don't worry, I totally get it. He also paid no income taxes at all in 10 of the 15 previous years, largely because he reported losing much more money than he made, which I buy. I just disagree about whether that should absolve him of his tax obligations. But anyway, $750 a year. I tweeted that I probably spent more in 2016 on League of Legends skins than that. Arguably, I spent more on Pop-Tarts in any given year than that. Feel free in the chat right now to put in there what you spent more than $750 on. It's just amazing. And I get if you believe that this isn't going to get through to anyone. And sure, for the diehard Trump MAGA head, it's not going to. But I think that America doesn't like rich people getting away with murder like this. Certainly some of them will have a problem with this. It certainly seemed to hurt Mitt Romney back during his presidential run.
Right, especially because it wasn't $10,000, which is still egregiously low, right? $10,000 is more on par with maybe what your average American might be paying. This is $750, straight up a slap in the face. And we've all kind of just recently paid taxes. So, and taxes are, you know, left or right, I think everyone's got a problem with them. You know, I think the left feels like they don't actually go to helping communities, right? They're going to B-52 bombers and drones and whatever else we're selling to Saudi Arabia, right? And the right doesn't because they don't want to help, you know, kids get an education, things like that. So there's everyone's got a problem with it. It doesn't look good no matter what side of the political spectrum you're on. I also just want to point out, I want money back for my losses. I want money back all the time. Look, dude, I got a podcast, man. I invested money in that podcast. I've got, you know, thousands of dollars worth of equipment, but I'm not making that money back. I didn't get enough tips. Like, where's my write-off for being like, I didn't make what I thought I was gonna, you know what I mean? It's like, obviously, I could incorporate LLC, call me. But the point is like, most Americans do not get to write off their debt. When they fail, they end up in debtor's prison. When they fail to pay a $30 parking ticket, they get their car impounded, all right? That's what most Americans go through.
Totally. Yeah, and by the way, so if 1 year you lose a ton, so now you don't have to pay taxes, what about next year when you do really well? Are you paying that back? Are you making that up? I mean, that's largely how unemployment works for us plebes. And again, some of this is just the way the system has been rigged to benefit the rich. But there's stuff here that is not just contained within that, that is going to spur any number of different congressional investigations. It's just that if he wins re-election, none of it's gonna matter. You're not gonna get any of this to stick. Let's talk about a little bit more of this. So you also have hanging over Donald Trump, a decade-long audit battle with the IRS over the legitimacy of a $72.9 million tax refund that he claimed and received after declaring huge losses. So that's sort of the test of my hypothetical from before. So this is quite a while ago. He got a massive tax refund after declaring huge losses. An adverse ruling could cost him more than $100 million. So that's just one thing here. We got one graphic on his $100 million potential legal battle that he's involved in right now. We're gonna sort of summarize the top level of this though. His reports to the IRS portray a businessman who takes in hundreds of millions of dollars a year, yet racks up chronic losses that he aggressively employs to avoid paying taxes. Now, with his financial challenges mounting, the records show that he depends more and more on making money from businesses that put him in potential and often direct conflict of interest with his job as president, including with international corporations and individuals who are putting money into these businesses. Not to mention, like, there's things like the fact that in his first 2 years in the White House, he earned $73 million in international revenue, a lot of it from things like his properties in Scotland. But he earned millions from the Philippines, millions from India, a million from Turkey. He's the president. He's not supposed to have those sorts of, like, the fact that potentially millions of dollars of future revenue could be on the line if he does or doesn't do certain things. Any line of what we're saying right now should be its own scandal. But we're being hit by so much of this because Donald Trump is a smart crook and he breaks all the laws, basically.
I mean, here's the thing. When you say all that and you think about countries that the US has chided for decades, you know, as having strongmen and authoritarians, you know, whether it's, I don't know, Duterte, Berlusconi, you know, pick a country where we think that having a business magnate as president who continues to use his office to, or their office to make even more money on top of that without, you know, disclosing or withholding or putting any of their money away, like all that we've judged for so many years. And what Trump has done, because somehow there aren't laws in place to preserve our shining city on a hill that is sliding down it right now. What Trump has done is has been normalizing this kind of crookery. He's been normalizing kleptocracy as if to say, what democracy? No, this is perfectly normal. Because see, I'm Trump. See, I'm the demagogue. See, this is what you elected, except we didn't. This is so all of this, and I think that it's very easy for us because of course he's a crook. Of course it's $750. We all knew that. But trying to normalize it is just allowing us to normalize again, a kleptocrat and authoritarian.
Yeah. Yeah, 100%, which is why like we've been waiting to get this information for a while, and God only knows how much more is there. We don't know. We don't know the extent. We don't know what particular documents. You know, they say in their reporting that they got this from people who had legal access to it. We're gonna get into all of that, but there's a few more pieces of this that are important that we at least mention. We can't delve into everything.
We need to talk about a relatively new show called the Republic, or UNFTR. As a Young Turks fan, you already know that the government, the media, and corporations are constantly peddling lies that serve the interests of the rich and powerful. But now there's a podcast dedicated to unraveling those lies, debunking the conventional wisdom. In each episode of the Republic, or UNFTR, the host delves into a different historical episode or topic that's generally misunderstood or purposely obfuscated by the so-called powers that be, featuring in-depth research, razor-sharp commentary, and just the right amount of vulgarity. The UNFTR podcast takes a sledgehammer to what you thought you knew about some of the nation's most sacred historical cows. But don't just take my word for it. The New York Times described UNFTR as consistently compelling and educational, aiming to challenge conventional wisdom and upend the historical narratives that were taught in school. For as the great philosopher Yoda once put it,
"You must unlearn what you have learned."
And that's true whether you're in Jedi training or you're uprooting and exposing all the propaganda and disinformation you've been fed over the course of your lifetime. So search for UNFDR in your podcast app today and get ready to get informed, angered, and entertained all at the same time.
If you are sort of new to American politics, don't pay attention to this sort of stuff very often, or perhaps you're an international viewer who doesn't get the way the system is set up, we did find a quick explainer video for how American tax policy is set up for the rich. Here is a little way to visualize that. Yeah, that's basically it. Yeah, if you're rich, you can do whatever you want, honestly. But anyway, let's give you some more of the big numbers here. So Donald Trump not only has this big audit battle that he's dealing with, that hypothetically like $100+ million is on the line. You also have within the next 4 years, more than $300 million in loans, obligations for which he is personally responsible will come due. Now, some of that is public information. That is so much money though, that this guy who apparently has been losing millions and millions of dollars every year since at least 2012, according to his documents, is suddenly going to lose $1/3 billion. And to who? What would he potentially do to put that off or to absolve himself of those debts? This is why you cannot have, we couldn't afford a peanut farmer to have those sorts of conflict of interest, but this is a guy saddled with hundreds of millions of dollars, a Will Smith in debt, and potentially to American corporations, potentially to foreign corporations or foreign governments. And we're just supposed to accept that this is okay.
Yeah, I mean, I can't help but think of Michael Cohen, you know, and coming out with that book recently, and the ways that he said openly, look, the Russia stuff, yeah, you know, everyone wants to focus on like maybe how Russia helped Trump get elected. That's not really the story. The story is the money. Always follow the money and remember that Trump didn't want to get elected. And Michael Cohen says this in his book. He's interviewed, given a lot of interviews to this, that Trump never wanted to get elected. Truly, this run at the presidency was to revitalize the brand because he was once again in debt because he, you know, wasted all his money. This is a guy who bankrupts casinos. Is that How do you do that? Anyway, so Russia was his meal ticket out. Being able to build Trump Moscow, which never got built, right? But the idea of it, getting in with Russian oligarchs, that was his out. That was his thing. And the plan wasn't really to win the presidency, but now that we have, can never leave. can never leave.
Because it would simply open himself up to too much legal liability, unless potentially it's Biden who gets elected, because he seems to come from the school of Democrats that's looking forward, not looking back, and allowing huge criminal acts to go unprosecuted. That's potentially the case. But in Donald Trump's case, that's not necessarily going to save him. It's one thing for us to just, you know, let all of your war crimes be on the House. It's another thing when there are state level tax fraud implications that hypothetically could be investigated. Let's talk a little bit about some of those things that might not necessarily be totally legal. So between 2010 and 2018, Mr. Trump wrote off some $26 million in unexplained consulting fees as a business expense across nearly all of his projects. In most cases, the fees were roughly 1/5 of his income. Mr. Trump reduced his taxable income by treating a family member as a consultant, in many cases, Ivanka Trump herself, and then deducting the fee as a cost of doing business. The IRS has pursued civil penalties against some business owners who devise schemes to avoid tax by paying exorbitant fees to related parties who are not in fact independent contractors. So look, that may seem complicated. It's not complicated. I get paid to do a job. I take a fifth of that. I say I needed that contractor's help to do it. So I give my relative the money, so it's still in my family, and pretend that that was a cost of doing business rather than just a significant portion of what I was paid. Right. So it's not only avoiding taxation right then, it's also hypothetically skirting the estate tax laws and things like that. You cannot simply artificially say, I need to pay my daughter something. I'm gonna pay her $1 million to make me a glass of lemonade. You can't do that. That is actually tax fraud in this case. So that is something that hypothetically could get looked into.
I feel like the reason Trump said okay to having children was to use them to do tax crime. Like, you know, he's like it's like a parent, you know, opening a credit card in their kid's name and then running up the bill. It's the same thing, but on a really big, big scale. Yeah, just because they're your kid. And he's been using his kids as an excuse this entire time. And there's been no accountability, meaning the Trump organization, he said, well, Ivanka and Eric, or what's the other one? Junior, not Eric, let's be real. Ivanka and Junior are gonna run the business. Kids. Have a good time. Exactly. Well, that's not divesting of your of the holdings in the Trump organization. So what is that? Again, all of this is once again layers of infuriating, but for me it's mostly why now, 4 years after this, we're not surprised. Why did we ever think that Trump was gonna obey or follow any norm? Oh yeah, well, most presidents release their tax returns. Who cares? He won't. Write it down. Write it down, America. Make it a law.
Exactly. All of this should be laws. That's, you know, if that could be one of the silver linings that comes out of this garbage period of American history, it's that the laws probably won't save us. Even the Constitution might not, but the norms are nothing. They're not even icing. They're like the flavor in a LaCroix. I guess technically they're there, sort of. Anyway, okay, a little bit more to catch you up on. So let's see. Cost of haircuts. He wrote off $70,000 paid to style his hair during The Apprentice. Now, this is the one bit of news I actually like. Because he's ripped off a lot of people in his life, but that hairstylist was definitely ripping him off because he did not get $70,000 worth. But anyway, no, you can't just write off literally anything. It's necessary expenses. Nobody can say that $70,000 is necessary for hair for a single year. So that for a normal person could get you in trouble.
Especially not that hair.
Yeah, especially that.
That hair. That hair. Your stylist has been taking you for a ride.
Exactly.
That's obviously not his. Sorry, just gonna say that's Ivanka. That $70,000 is Ivanka.
Exactly, yeah. And so you have the Seven Springs property. So this is a property that he was planning to make a bunch of money on. Then he wasn't able to develop it the way that he wants. So he got something related to a conservation easement that basically says that I'm gonna be doing work on this. It's gonna be an investment someday. So just let me use all of this to write off taxes for now. And then someday, no, I swear, it's totally legitimate business. Someday it's gonna make me money. And then they just lived there for years and years. And in multiple interviews, the Trump boys were saying, it's our compound. We had fun riding ATVs there and everything. It wasn't a legitimate investment property at all. It was just a place that they lived while reaping literally tens of millions of dollars in tax benefits just off of that. That's not everything in this document. That's off of that one property. So that should certainly be looked into. Now, there is a response from Trump organization lawyer, Mr. Garton, that I want to give just because it's hilarious, saying over the past, so initially, by the way, really fast. So initially they said every fact in this is false. So the New York Times asked for a demonstration of some of the numbers that were false. And they came back with, okay, technically some of the stuff about his income tax might be false. And then they said this, which sounds like it's demonstrating that, but I'm gonna explain how it's not. So they said, over the past decade, President Trump has paid tens of millions of dollars in personal taxes to the federal government, including paying millions in personal taxes since announcing his candidacy in 2015. Now that sounds like they're saying, no, it wasn't $750 in personal income taxes, he paid millions, but that's not what it's saying. That is conflating different sorts of sort of optional taxes, like paying into Social Security, Medicare, things like that. Maybe he paid some of that because you apparently can't get around it. But the income taxes, which they are not talking about there, they don't dispute that those numbers are actually accurate.
Yeah, and in fact, the New York Times clarifies, this is not personal tax. This is business tax. This is his ventures that he's been skirting on. So they name that. But you know, whatever, the Trump organization and Trump lawyers are like, people don't read, hey.
Yeah, yeah, and by the way, we're gonna get to Trump's response. We're gonna give him the chance to respond to the extent that he can, since you know, speaking isn't his strong suit. But I want you to understand how dishonest he's being up until this point. In 2018, Trump announced, okay, so really fast to lay the groundwork for this. You have actual tax returns, and then you have personal financial disclosures. Now, Trump says and is now saying, you don't need to see my taxes, you've got my personal financial disclosure. But the thing is, personal financial disclosures are basically whatever you want them to be. You can make up all sorts of stuff in there, you can exaggerate things, and I will demonstrate how egregious it can be. So in 2018, in his annual financial disclosure, he said that he had made $434.9 million. His tax records in that year though show that he claimed $47.4 million in losses. That is a $500 million difference between the documents he wants you to look at and the documents he is sending to the government to personally benefit from. So when he comes at you telling you, you again in the future don't need to see my taxes, you can just see these documents, understand he can be lying to the tunes of literally billions of dollars in those. So anyway, that's the most important information. There is so much more in this, but we simply cannot go into everything. Perhaps in future days this week, we'll delve into more parts of this. But I do think that in theory, this might affect some voters. It certainly should. The fact that he is such a con man that he apparently doesn't care anything about contributing to this country that he implies that he loves so much. Not to mention the fact that he might very well have broken the law in more ways than most people could even imagine. I mean, you know, bear in mind, where's the reference I had here? Like Wesley Snipes, didn't he go to jail for tax avoidance?
Right,
like,
right.
Like tons of people are in jail for this stuff. Apparently their lawyers aren't as skilled, I don't know.
Yeah, I'm so mad. Like also just thinking about like Lauryn Hill, Wesley Snipes, both black celebrities, yeah. Cool. Maybe there's a little bit of a discrimination even at that high level, even in the millions of dollars, sure there is, why not, you know? Hollywood starlets who make hundreds of millions of dollars are still making hundreds of millions of dollars less than their male counterparts. This stuff happens all the time. I want everyone to remember this kind of grifting, this kind of fraud, you know who pays for it? We do, the actual taxpayers. Working people are subsidizing this grift. We do it every single day. We're not only responsible for subsidizing our communities and you know having taxes that subsidize everything from wars to schools, but we're subsidizing these MFers' ability to get away with this kind of fraud. Because the money's gotta come from somewhere, right? The money has gotta come from somewhere and it's coming from working people. The last thing I'll say is when Paul Ryan comes back, because he is waiting in the wings, and I'm so every day I'm like, where's Paul Ryan? When's he coming back? When's he coming back to claim he never enabled Trump? No, no, no. Mm-hmm. And the deficit. No, honey, no. You never get to talk about the deficit ever again. Close all your loopholes, close them right up. Let's make the tax structure fair, and then maybe I'll let you talk about the deficit.
Yeah. Yeah, and by the way, that list, whatever list, I don't know what we're calling it, the list that Paul Ryan is definitely on. Understand that at least he went away. There are other people who didn't even have the decency to go take a breather for a few years that are going to claim. You don't think Marco Rubio is going to be talking about how he stood up to Donald Trump and Ted Cruz, big alpha man with the weasel beard, Ted Cruz, you know, the Confederate ferret as the Confederate, as you pointed out. No, he stood up to Trump. No, you could have, you didn't. And also a reminder that while Donald Trump doesn't pay taxes while talking about America First, undocumented immigrants pay millions of dollars in state taxes, even in the reddest states. They contribute and thank you for doing that. Undocumented immigrants make America stronger in more ways than we could possibly count. Thank you for everything that you have and continue to contribute to America. Now, how is all this tax information going to play out? I know some people will say nothing matters. I've said it many times, but maybe this will. So we don't yet have the hardest hitting like Midas touch ads or anything like that. But Joe Biden already has an ad pointing out what this new tax information means. Take a look. I mean, look, that's a first draft. It could be only about 100 times stronger, but you kind of get the idea. Like, we've all been paying into this, and not just in a random year. We've all been paying into this and contributing to America in the hardest year that we've had in living memory, while he's just skating by, enriching himself, and in no way contributing to the country. I do think that that is going to affect some people. I don't know how many, but in a close election, it's going to affect some people.
Yeah, my only problem with that ad is the music. It's just such a downer. I need like more of a something on par with the absurdity, like a Benny Hill, you know. Like that's really what the tax structure is. It's just Benny Hill. It's just Trump chasing women around a room. Yeah, it's. I also think it's important to notice who was in that group: teachers, nurses, firefighters, people who we're calling essential, people who we're sending back to work in person despite COVID, not going anywhere, getting worse for sure. And then my mind goes to Bezos. And then you wonder why people talk about guillotines. Look, y'all, all I'm saying, study revolutions of the past. The rich need to get it together. Otherwise, we're gonna figure out how to eat them somehow. Somehow it's gonna happen, probably.
Yeah. It might have been a little bit, a few months since we've been regularly talking about wealth taxes, but wealth taxes have got to come. And I don't know, Donald Trump is proving it. Bezos and the other billionaires spent the last quarter proving it. Donald Trump has some splaining to do with all this information coming out of the New York Times investigation into his taxes. And he has taken at least three different tactics for explaining this. So number one, you could probably guess if you've been paying attention to this season of America. Initially last night it was fake news. That's it, just a tweet that says fake news. This is why he downplays the pandemic. He doesn't want to panic you. He just shouts fake news at anything that comes. So he said that, and then he took the night off and he woke up. He was asked about it on video. And so look, obviously this is very important and people need to understand whether he broke the law or not. So here is how he reassured America.
I am looking very forward to the debate. Thank you, everybody.
Say anything about the tax returns, Mr. President. When are you gonna release them?
Steve, thank you, pal.
So as a reporter shouts out, say something about your taxes, when are you gonna release them? He goes, mumbling probably. So that was take two. But here's take three. Okay, so the fake news media, just like election time 2016, is bringing up my capital T taxes and all sorts of other nonsense with illegally obtained information and only bad intent. The Times says that it was totally legal, and I have a feeling they probably weren't gonna do that illegally. But anyway, we'll find out. I paid many millions of dollars in taxes, but was entitled, like everyone else, to depreciation and tax cuts. What? Who among us isn't entitled to millions of dollars in depreciation? Who among us? He continues. Also, if you look at the extraordinary assets owned by me, which the fake news hasn't, I am extremely underleveraged. I have very little debt compared to the value of assets. He has literally hundreds of millions of dollars of debt. Much of this information is already on file, but I have long said that I may release financial statements. Yeah, he's gonna release all sorts of stuff, totally. And again, those financial disclosures he might release, we already know what those are worth. They're worth about as much as a different type of paper that Trump uses on a daily basis after downing a couple fillets of fish. From the time I announced it was going to run for president, showing all properties, assets, and debts, it is a very impressive statement, capital S statement, and also shows that I am the only president on record to give up my yearly $400,000 plus presidential salary. Okay, so he says fake news. He's gonna release another document that doesn't show anything. Will he release his taxes now? Because the New York Times is lying. Those documents are all wrong. They're full of lies. But the actual documents are obviously correct. So now at long last, will he not release them? Why would he hide them? I mean, we were so worried for so long. And now it looks like, oh my God, they were full of exactly what we thought they would be. So he has an opportunity to prove those New York Times reporters are all massive frauds and liars by releasing the documents that he suspiciously continues to not release even after years and years of saying that he will. Francesca, it's just so difficult to understand why these things would be happening.
You know, I've said it before many, 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 many times, but we will see a D-pick from Trump before we see his tax returns. You can bet on it. He will fake his own death before we see his tax returns. He'll join whatever island Epstein's on right now, because maybe he's on an island, a different island than his other island, you know, but there is no way. And you can tell by the way that he words these tweets, if you read sort of, if you know how to read ignorant well enough, that this gets him. This is just, ooh, it's a little gut punch, right? Like he's, I have many assets owned by me. I'm entitled. I may not. Anyway, gotta go over here now. Like he is so upset by this. Because I think it's not about whether he can get away with it, because he's flaunted that before, right? He said, it's on, like, I'm smart. If I can get away with not paying taxes, I'm smart. Already, I think that's un-American. I think that's unfair. I think that's cheating. That doesn't matter. For him, it's what is he worth? Mm-hmm. Is he not actually a billionaire? Is he not actually as wealthy as he is? And I think that, you know, in speaking to the, is this going to resonate with any of his followers? Maybe. And maybe because they realize this guy is actually completely a phone. He's not as wealthy as he says he is. He's poorer than most people because we're not $1 billion in debt. You know, we're not that in debt. And I just wanna say, if I were Michael Bloomberg, I would go to a Trump rally and pay every single one of those people $750 to go home and see if they take it. I just, man, if I was rich, I would do that. It. Here you go, $750. Yeah. Don't spend it all in place. I know you, yes, you can use it. The times are tough, go home. Would they take it? I bet you a lot of them would.
Yeah, and look, if we're gonna be talking about Bloomberg, which story has enraged the right more? The realization that Donald Trump for years and years and years hasn't paid taxes. And even in the couple of years where he did, he paid $750, like the price of like a new iPhone, I guess. It might even be more. Or Bloomberg paying off people's debt to their state, freeing them up to exercise their democratic privileges and vote and all that, their democratic rights and vote. That obviously, by the way, quick spoiler alert, all of the bootlickers are pretending that the New York Times getting the taxes is a story. How could they have done this? Not anything that's revealed in it. They're not worried about that at all. But anyway, I did want to run you through a few more of Donald Trump's comments on paying taxes. Not in response to this story, but from earlier, because as always, there's a tweet for everything. So back in 2012, Donald Trump tweeted, "Barack Obama, who wants to raise all our taxes, only pays 20.5% on a 790K salary. Do as I say, not as I do." And he was sort of being honest in that last part, because the saying and the doing are very different for him. But Barack Obama only paid 20.5%. You don't pay anything. You literally don't pay anything.
Right.
And then, okay, you might think, well, that's way back in 2012. Take a look at this. So this is from 2018. Trump tweeted, "Signing a recent tax return, isn't this ridiculous?" First of all, he doesn't do anything in his taxes except maybe sign one document. And in 2016, he paid $750. So you can stack up however much paper you want. Apparently, more money went to the Michael Scott Paper Company than actually went to the federal government when that document was finalized. Because yeah, it's really annoying to sign something. But it is nice to have conned the US government out of tens of millions of dollars.
CNN had a recent graphic, and I haven't verified it, but it was basically comparing the last, I think, six presidents and what they paid in income tax. Mm-hmm. Clinton, $60,000 one year, which was like surprisingly low. Bush was something like, you know, in the $200,000. And Obama was $1.5 million, by far the greatest out of all of the former presidents. Yet, I don't think he was the richest. So, maybe he was just more honest. Maybe he knew if he slipped up, being the first black president, he would absolutely be gone after. I don't know.
Totally.
But it was an interesting comparison to make and to look at.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. And look, I don't know if this could the New York Times have published this a week or a month ago. Some people are saying, well, it's coming out 2 days before a debate. Is that, did they do that on purpose? Look, I'm just glad that they didn't wait to publish their book about this. So this is definitely gonna come up. Biden, they released that ad. He was asked about this, but like he has declined to give an actual statement. It sounds like he's waiting to do it on debate night. So really fast, how successful do we think that's gonna be as a focus of the debate? Knowing that Trump is definitely gonna do his line again, that it makes me smart. The question is, in a pandemic year where tens of millions of people lost their jobs and other people have just been financially ruined, is that gonna sell as like a fun line? It makes me smart, as people are watching like friends and family members die and lose everything and lose their jobs and they're sitting at home unable to do anything. I feel like it's a different time. I don't know that that's gonna be as successful of a line for Donald Trump.
No.
You think they held it? Did they hold it for the debate?
I think, look, I wouldn't say that news organizations don't hold or decide when to release articles. I've been thinking about this. Of course they do. That's all, you know, they know when they've been asked to hold something and they've done it. They'll release something on time. I definitely think it has something to do with the election, but it also has something to do with when they could verify their sources. I've been thinking why they didn't wait even longer. I don't think it matters that it's ahead of a debate. I don't think the debate actually really matters all that much. I'll be watching, but I don't think it super matters. I'm wondering when and how he's going to spin this and turn the narrative, and it'll all just will reset to zero, right? He just a week ago or less than a week ago said he might not leave office if he was voted out. Like, nothing really matters. So if you're gonna hold it until right before the election. But once again, you know, who knows what the calculation inside the New York Times is.
And I will say again, everyone should go read the full thing. It's like 10,000 words, but you should definitely read it or at least skim it like a. But they've also said that there's gonna be further reporting coming out in the near future. So they didn't necessarily delve into everything, certainly not to the extent that they can, and more of that will be coming. So we'll see, probably not before the debate. There's only one more day, but you know, perhaps in the next month, more will come out. We've been waiting to find out who is Trump's pick going to be to replace Ruth Bader Ginsburg. And there's reason to believe that it would be Amy Coney Barrett. But in a surprising twist, he has picked Amy Coney Barrett, sparking a chorus of outrage from Democrats and progressive groups who warned her confirmation could shift the court to one that would dismantle the ACA and work to preserve the Trump agenda for decades to come. So we know quite a bit about her because she was one of the names that was bandied about the last time around, actually. So you need to know that she's called Roe v. Wade a framework of abortion on demand. She's openly opposed the ACA. She critiqued the Supreme Court's decision to uphold the individual mandate. She was paid by an anti-LGBTQ hate group to deliver a lecture, and on and on and on. She is the Christian right wing's wet dream of a Supreme Court justice who will do what they want, overturn Roe v. Wade, among other things. That's who we sort of expected he was going to go for, and that is indeed who he picked, Francesca.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the, you know, Ruth is barely in the ground. Barely, just barely. Wow, they had the decency to wait less than a day. And now her, basically her nemesis, her complete opposite, right? A woman who I think others have said walked through the doors that Ruth Bader Ginsburg opened, right? A woman, Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who fought for equal pay. Ruth Bader Ginsburg, who fought for women to be able to own property in their name and credit cards, et cetera, whatever, all the rights that now Amy Coney Barrett apparently doesn't stand for now that she's gotten to the Supreme Court. And according to a speech that she gave in front of, for a commencement speech, the point of her law degree is to, what is it, serve the kingdom of God? Mm-hmm. Yikes, yikes. It's just, it's biblical creepy stuff. And apparently her organization that she's part of is not actually the inspiration for Handmaid's Tale, even though they have handmaids in her organization. What is it called? The People of Praise? I don't even want to know.
Yeah, one of them is the People of Praise. One is a different one. It's something from Dungeons and Dragons, I think. yeah, so here we're getting into now we have opened up the right to say, aha, you aren't opposed to her because we totally want her to overturn Roe v. Wade, and she's going to, and you've been opposed to that for half a century. That's not why. You're opposed to her because you're anti-Catholic. And here's the thing, as a person who was raised half Roman Catholic, allow me to say that Roman Catholics are crazy, but the other half was Lutheran, they're crazy too. I got news for you, I'm an atheist. I love you all. You're all crazy in different ways and to different degrees. It's all kind of crazy to me. The anti-Catholic thing is such BS. I mean, Biden, like the idea that the opposition is based off of that just doesn't make any sense whatsoever. No, it's based on what she's going to do, what she's being picked to do. The other stuff is like flavor text on that. and it's weird and it's creepy, but it could be for any number of different religious persuasions. I don't care about that. I care about what she's actually going to do. And so that's
she's also been called, it's also called anti-woman if you criticize her, which again is the right's favorite game of feminism only applies to us and not to you. What is feminism anyway? I don't understand. No, feminism is working for equal rights, and reproductive rights are absolutely part of women's equal rights. You know, it's funny because we just got done talking about tax returns and Trump's crimes and crookery. And now we go to, again, this very orthodox, creepy, biblical, you know, what we've called, you know, Christian nationalism, which is absolutely the agenda of the right now. And I just think Russia, like, I'm not trying to like red bait or get into any of that. It's not about anti-Russia, but look at the way that Russia has these pillars of the Orthodox Church and kleptocracy and these kleptocrats and oligarchs. It's like beautiful. Like, I don't want to be Russia. I'm sorry. Don't want it.
There's a great comment on Twitch from Trashy Plays who says, it's anti-woman to call out a woman for wanting to take rights away from women. I would argue that I am going to oppose her wanting to, you know, consign women to back alley abortions in the same way and to the same degree I would if a right wing male was doing it. But we should also add, because we're going to talk a little bit more about abortion in a bit, the fact that they are rushing to push through a justice that will help strip health insurance from tens of millions of Americans as we're still in the grip of a horrendous pandemic is just, it's perfect. It's so 2020. And in a normal democracy, in normal times, they would pay a horrendous political cost for doing that. We'll have to see if that happens. I don't know at this point, but it seems insane to do that. We'll have to see. But
do it. Just try it. Try it. I want them to. I truly do.
Well, they're doing
I want
it. Them. And they're rushing through.
Yeah,
you're saying
no.
Try to strip away. Yeah. Well, Maybe soon.
Repeal the ACA in the middle of a pandemic. Go ahead. Let's see what happens. Go ahead. Do it.
You're gonna be back on the show someday, and we're gonna talk about that news exactly. On abortion and Donald Trump and Amy Coney Barrett, is that actually why he has chosen her? I know that's why many right wingers wanted him to choose her, but let's go to a little bit of video of Donald Trump talking about her and that topic.
I want to dive right into the core issue. For conservatives, for evangelicals, for Catholics, since 1973, there's been a clamoring for a review and reversal of Roe v. Wade. Right. You sat down with our own Chris Wallace in 2016, Mr. President, and said this: if we put another two or three justices on the court, the overturn of Roe v. Wade will happen automatically, in my opinion, because I'm putting pro-life justices on the court. Would you like to see Roe challenged and overturned?
So I didn't think it was for me to discuss that with her, because it's something she's going to be ruling on, and this is what I was told, although I would have had the right to do that. But if you look at her past actions and rulings, I guess she maybe would be in the category that you mentioned. I don't know. I can say this, that she is certainly conservative in her views and her rulings. And we'll have to see how that all works out.
Do you think a 6-3 court with three of your picks on there, Mr. President, would potentially rule on a life issue, on a Roe issue?
It's certainly possible. And maybe they do it in a different way. Maybe they'd give it back to the states. You just don't know what's going to happen.
Okay, so really fast on all of that, just bear in mind that interview. And Hegseth has no problem with anything that Donald Trump just said there. For the future of every comment that a conservative will ever make about the Supreme Court, how it's supposed to function, how they're supposed to be picked, Roe v. Wade is precedent. And they're just saying, no, as soon as we can, we're going to overrule. I don't care about any of that. So just understand that they don't care about that. The idea that these are supposed to be like reading the strict like word of the Constitution. No, they were picking conservatives. They want someone who is socially and economically conservative in their politics. He didn't say anything about judicial temperament or judicial philosophy. He said, she's a right winger. I want a right winger. So just bear that in mind. But Francesca, he seems pretty confident there. He doesn't seem to care. He doesn't seem emotionally invested, but he seems pretty confident that she's gonna overturn it.
Maybe they will, maybe they're in the category you say. I'm not gonna commit one way or another. Anyway, I pay for all my abortions. Yeah, they're in the best private facilities. They got whatever. Like, it's once again, abortion is not going anywhere. It's just gonna get a lot less safe. And I wanna shout out some of the amazing work that groups like Handmaids in Texas and there's a Handmaids, network of pro-choice organizers who are in states that already have had Roe v. Wade stripped. Because mind you, if Roe v. Wade goes away, absolutely, it would be devastating, but it does really fall to the state. And in so many different cases, states have already been stripping away abortion rights and reproductive rights, obviously by saying that, hallways have to be a certain width, or they have to have hospital admitting privileges in a clinic that performs abortions, which is completely ridiculous. So you already have abortion deserts and states where people have to drive miles and miles and miles, go to a different neighboring state. So you're definitely going to see a rise in deaths from women. You're gonna see a rise of refugees, of people going. There are already people crossing the US-Mexico border into Mexico to get a safe abortion. This is all about safe abortions. It's not about whether or not they're gonna happen, because they're gonna happen. And it's really scary. It's scary, and it's also, it feels cheap. I think if anyone, even if you are, even let's say you're pro-life, let's say you think you're Christian and you think that being Christian means protecting a zygote's life, which it doesn't in my book. Really, this is the package you want to go with? Because for me, this is a last effort. This is a last ditch attempt to continue to pander to evangelicals and assumed Christians and to rewin election, So.
Yeah, and it couldn't be more of a pander. I mean, as I said, it was fairly clear in that he doesn't care at all about overturning Roe v. Wade. He was pro-choice back, a couple decades ago when his yearly abortion, bill was more than his tax bill. He doesn't care about that. Now, I understand if you're a right winger who literally the only reason there is politics is to make sure that nobody gets an abortion, then you don't care if he's a true believer. You want it to be outlawed. I get that. But I want to make the point that while her getting on the court massively increases the odds that Roe v. Wade will be overturned, I buy kind of at least what he said in that interview is that he didn't ask her about it or he didn't press the issue. It's certainly not a litmus test. I will make the case, and feel free to disagree with me, Francesca. He cares about one thing and one thing only, and he 100% asked her about it. We know that with Comey, he asked for a personal pledge of loyalty. That's what he wants. Yep. And that comes in a couple different forms, but there's only one that matters now, and that is, will you stop the vote when I say to stop the vote? When I send it to the Supreme Court and say mail-in ballots don't get counted, will you stop those ballots from being counted? Why would he have any other litmus test? He cares only about himself. That's it. He's not interested in the future of right-wing jurisprudence or whatever. I am sure that he asked that. And the fact that she was chosen implies to me that she reassured him that she's on his side. I don't have proof of that. I don't have any evidence of that aside from everything we know about Donald Trump.
I'm not disagreeing with you at all on that. I'm just mad. I'm just perpetually angry, John, and I am astounded. Look, I think what we are going through in this country is a little bit of Naomi Klein's shock doctrine, where we're getting hit from so many different sides with, you know, this corrupt, megalomaniacal POS rapist, and he's pulling on all the levers of this democracy, and now he's trying to steal an election, and we see it in plain sight. It's a slow-moving crime right now. I think Bernie gave an incredible speech, and I know you talked about it, about what we need to look for and what we need to demand. We should be calling every single day all of our elected officials, every single day, and every single drunk call them in the morning, speed dial your representatives and senators. It does not hurt. And also, I do think, you know, get a good pair of running shoes, because if and when it gets to the Supreme Court and they stop the votes, we're taking the streets. It's just gonna happen. It's still our right, yeah, like I've said, and we'll have to.
What is the state of the vote out there? Well, we've got some pretty amazing numbers. Apparently, in just 25 states, more than 860,000 Americans have already cast their vote in the 2020 election. But let's forget about that and let's ram through a SCOTUS nominee. Anyway, so nearly a million in 25 states so far. Now, to put that into perspective, for the same time period back in 2016, 9,525 had voted early. Wow. That is like 100 times less at this point. So Francesca, we knew that the numbers were gonna be larger, but 100 times is quite a bit larger, quite a bit.
It's huge. It's huge, and you can see why DeJoy is nervous and why Trump is leaning on him to do something about the Postal Service, right? Because I'm sure that was already happening. Look, vote early, y'all. That's all I have to say. I think this is great. This is great. You can vote early in person, vote early by mail. But look, if they're gonna kill us in this country with one of the longest electoral cycles and campaign cycles in the world, what does this start, like 3 years out? Then let us vote early at least. Let us be able to vote and not think about it anymore, because oh my God. But yeah, it's a good sign.
It is. And you know, hopefully this sort of comparison will be updated in a couple of weeks, because based on what happened in 2016, it starts to ramp up heavily from here on out. 1 week later, so it had been 9,500. 1 week later in 2016, 78,000 people had cast their ballots. So it had gone up by about 8-9 times. So we'll see if that's the same. The next week it had gone up to 1.4 million. So in a couple of weeks, we'll see if we're significantly higher than that 1.4 million. Now, what we've seen so far of that nearly 900,000 early votes, out of three states reporting party registration data, so this is Florida, Iowa, and North Carolina, the majority of early voters are Democrats at 54%. Republicans make up 16.7%, and those without a party affiliation make up 29.1%. So it is leaning towards the Democrats, as you might expect. Now, I greet this news as, hey, look, isn't this great that even in a pandemic, people can get out there and vote, they can take part in their democracy, and isn't it great that so many are doing so? Donald Trump has responded to this sort of news by saying, "The ballots being returned to states cannot be accurately counted. Many things are already going very wrong." How would he know?
How would he know?
How would you know that? And so what it is he is running kind of against Biden, but really against the election. He is running against the election itself. He, to the extent that he can signal it, he is signaling to us that he does not think he's going to win. This is not a position of confidence or the tough alpha guy is like totally got this. He is running as a whiny loser. And you would do that if your plan was not to win, but to challenge the results.
Yeah, he might not finish the race. You know, he's like the kid who's like, "No, you're cheating." He's like running behind, right? "You're a cheater. Oh, screw this. I don't even want to win." You know, like that kind of thing. Like that's where he's at. But also it you know, I don't know how state by state elections are working. I assume that those ballots are in safekeeping. They will not be opened until election day. They will not be counted then, or right? But like, does he have intel that we don't know? Is he hearing from DeSantis? Is he hearing from governors that it's not looking good for him? But this is again why, I mean, mentioning DeJoy, it just sends chills down my spine, because it's like all of the, you know, the top crook, you know, all the other crooks have to feed off the top crook. And if the top crook goes down, well, then they go down too. If the top crook gets prosecuted, well, they get prosecuted too. Now, it hasn't worked that way completely under the presidency, but as soon as he's not the president anymore, that's when it's game on, right?
Hopefully.
So, right, but it's like DeJoy and others who paid their way into this administration, like they've got a lot to lose if Trump loses. This is the person in charge of our mail. Cool. Vote early in person, y'all. You can do that in many states.
Yeah, you can do it early. You can do it by mail. Vote.org or tyt.com/vote. You can get so much information about deadlines, how to register. You can track your ballot if you've already sent it out. Don't think that just because you voted, everything's finalized. You want to make sure of that. Definitely check that twice. Now I want to go to one other graphic here, the last graphic of the show, because we are certainly getting on. When I show you this, if you start to feel even 1% complacent, I want you to run away from your monitor, center yourself, and then come back, because that is not what I want out of this. But I do want to catch you up with the polling at this point in this race versus this point in decades of presidential elections. So this is according to the 538 national polling average. So this is national, okay? Right now, Biden is up by 7.3 points. At the same point back in the last election, Clinton was up by 3.7 points. Obama was up by 3.6 back in 2012. You know, you can go back there. Now, so at this point, everyone who was up at this point did indeed go on to win the popular vote. But notably, that does not mean that they won the election. So just bear that in mind. Don't become complacent. This election is more different from the others than any of the others are from the others because of the pandemic, the early mail-in vote, and all of that. But these are how the numbers look right now on the eve of the first debate, at least.
I mean, and we know that's what is necessary, right? To overcome, to overwhelm the steel, and to overcome all of the noise that Trump's going to be making. Whereas Bernie said, you know, if he tails, I win; heads, you lose, right? Like, so no matter what, and all the fraud that he's going to be calling, you got to overwhelm that. There has to be a landslide. I hope there is. That is the way that this ends peacefully. That's the way that, you know, we can all of this sort of mold, the mold that's been growing out, the mushroom on the back brush of Ted Cruz just sort of recoils, right? And recoils back like the Wicked Witch of the West feet going back underneath the house or whatever. I'm mixing metaphors, but you get it. We gotta win in a landslide.
We totally do. If he could win Florida, if he could win, like you know what I want? And I think you all want it too. Election night, you're watching TYT. We're pretty drunk at this point, and we call Florida for Biden.
Yes.
That's what I want. That's what I need. I mean, technically, what I need is a second season of Dark Crystal, but that apparently isn't going to come. So for right now, it's Florida going for Biden. That's what we need. If Texas could go for Biden, yeah, let's make it happen. Alas, Francesca, maybe. No, probably not. But that's what we need. And honestly, I don't think Francesca's exaggerating at all. For this to be peaceful or to have the best chance of peace, we need a landslide. And they have done everything they can to artificially shrink it.
Yeah, it needs to shut every Proud Boy up. It needs to be like the rally they held, which is like, oh, there's gonna be tens of thousands of people in Portland. No, there's like 400. They're all armed, but you know, there's very few of you. This needs to send them all packing. You know, and their moms would like that too, and for them to move out of the basement. You get it. Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. And we will be watching, we'll be doing coverage and everything. So let's have that happen, because I have, you know, I don't want more excitement in my life. I don't. If I want more excitement, I'll rewatch an episode of Lovecraft Country. I don't want excitement on election night, basically, okay? So let's just make that happen. Anyway, Francesca, thank you as always for joining us. Great to have you here. You know, looking forward to being on your show in the future. Where can people see that?
Yay, the Bituation Room podcast on all podcasting platforms. Also on YouTube/FrannyFio, which is my Twitter handle and my Instagram handle. Thank you so much, John, for doing this show. We love you. Thank you all for watching.
Thank you.
And hope your day is fantastic.
So that's the screenshot right there.
I'll see myself out.
Have a good one. So if you were to find out that top staffers in the Trump campaign weren't necessarily being paid perfectly equal between different racial groups, you might not be that shocked by that. But what if I were to tell you that in addition, it isn't necessarily a perfect picture on the Biden side either? Well, joining us now to break down some really amazing reporting in this area, senior Washington correspondent for Business Insider, Dave Leventhal, joins us once again on the show. Dave, welcome back.
Hey, good to be with you, John.
Good to have you here, especially considering how busy you've been. You've got a lot of stories that have been coming out recently. So tell me a little bit about this investigation that you did.
Well, so often we talk about in the corporate world and in different industries, different businesses. Well, are people represented at the top ranks of those corporations or those industries? And is it reflective of America in general? And so we wanted to take that to the political world. And so we analyzed the top salaries of both the Trump presidential campaign and the Biden presidential campaign. And as you alluded to, the Trump campaign, when you look at the top 20 salaries, you crunch the numbers, you do the data, it's a pretty white picture. And 16 people on the Trump campaign are white when it comes to their top 20 earners. On the Biden campaign though, the top five members of the Biden campaign in terms of their pay are also white, although in general, the picture is much more diverse on the Biden side than it is the Trump side.
It is. And so what I would like to some context that would help me to understand this is, and I know that you can't necessarily do the same sort of analysis for so many past campaigns, the information might not even exist, but do we have reason to believe that either of them might be better or worse than on average, or even in comparison to the Clinton and Trump campaigns back in 2016?
Yeah, so we looked at the 2016 campaign, and it was for the Trump campaign largely the same, a little bit different personnel, different people. But when it came to those top earners, it was also a pretty white campaign in 2016 versus in 2020. Hillary Clinton had a kind of a similar diversity, both in terms of gender and also in racial and ethnic makeup to the Biden campaign. But in both cases, still you have a campaign that when it comes to the people who are really in the upper echelon of the campaign, there's a lot of people who are white. That's no commentary on whether that's good or it's bad. It's just simply the reality of what it is. And I talked to some academics and some people who study racial issues and gender issues. And basically what they told me is that there's still a long way to go in politics. And when it comes to the people who are really at the spear's edge or the tip of the spear for any political campaign, including Democratic campaigns, that you're not gonna necessarily have in that upper echelon a campaign that looks like America writ large.
Interesting. Although hypothetically, were you to dig a little bit deeper, you might see trends that could imply that future campaigns might. I don't know if maybe there might be evidence of that that came up during your investigation.
Absolutely, and especially in the Biden campaign, when you go beyond the top earners and you go to the next 20 and the 20 below that in terms of the people making the money, then you find a lot of people of color. You find many women on the Biden campaign, and in fact, it's a very, very equal campaign when you look at it gender. And so, yeah, if that's an area that is of concern to you, if you care about there being good representation on a campaign that you want to support, then the Biden campaign is giving you a little bit more of that than the Trump campaign at this point.
Is there any clear trend in terms of overall, like, level of pay for the same sorts of jobs between these two campaigns? Are the staffers of one of the campaigns generally making more?
So we looked at Federal Election Commission data to do this analysis. And one stumbling block here is that the Trump campaign and the Biden campaign actually report their numbers differently. So it was difficult to compare apples and oranges. It seems, after you, without getting into all the details, that roughly everyone in that top 20 is making some pretty good coin, around $200,000 or more. And so nobody's going poor if they're working at the top of the Biden or the Trump campaign. But it is notable to note that on the Biden campaign side, there are a lot of women represented. And in fact, in the top 20 of the Biden campaign, 20 earners, that there are more women than there are men. Not the case for the Trump campaign, although it's about 12-8. One interesting note, John, is that there are no East Asians, people of East Asian descent, who are in the top 20 of either campaign. That speaks to a political truth of sorts that is a bit of an open secret in politics, that a lot of Asian Americans, especially East Asian Americans, are not well represented in politics. Andrew Yang used to bring this up from time to time too, and it's very much the truth when you do this type of analysis to really bore down into who is on these campaigns.
Interesting. I wanted to ask you potentially for a follow-up first, a related issue. So setting aside a bit of your analysis of some of the differences in pay based on different racial groups and gender groups. Back in July, the Campaign Legal Center had a complaint with the FEC that had to do with what was being alleged to be well over $100 million in disguised payments to campaign staffers, some of whom might be Trump family members. What is that all about?
Yeah, it's quite an accusation, and one that is also being looked at internally on the Trump campaign too, from spending that goes back to when Brad Parscale was the campaign manager. Brad Parscale has just in recent days had a very, very difficult time. He's been taken in because of an incident that relates to a potential suicide. So a pretty serious matter there. But putting that aside just for a moment, the Campaign Legal Center and others have accused the Trump campaign of basically falsifying payments or hiding the true nature of payments that are going to vendors, people who are hired by the campaign to do work. And that includes Brad Parscale potentially. It includes other folks too on the campaign, including Trump family members. And if you look at the roster of people who are earning salaries from the Trump campaign, there are a few people who just simply aren't there. And it's really strange and really odd. And it's Brad Parscale, it's Bill Stepien, the current campaign manager, and various other people in the Trump family. Well, are they getting paid? Are they getting money? The Trump campaign definitely has some very novel, I think you can call them, payment structures, and will oftentimes make payments through corporate entities or through other means that make it a lot more difficult to actually truly figure out who's getting the money, who's getting paid what and how. And that's really at the crux and the heart of the Campaign Legal Center's complaint that they put forward to the Federal Election Commission, which, mind you, doesn't have enough commissioners right now to actually go forward with investigations of this sort. So that's another layer of kind of craziness that we have here late in the campaign 2020.
Yeah, the issues with the FEC function is not going to come as a shock to anyone who's seen your past appearances on the show. It seems like, wouldn't who you're paying on your campaign staff be like sort of a top level concern for disclosure? Like, if we're going to know about the money going into and leaving your campaign, that seems like sort of the top level. Like, if we don't have that, then what's the point of the information we do have? So I'm assuming they're trying to get that information. But one question I have is, I'm assuming this is distinct from one of the issues that was raised from the New York Times recent reporting, the look into Trump's tax returns, was the possibility that he was using a sort of phony way of paying contractors, including family members, to take some portion of payments he was receiving and sort of disguise them as expenses. It doesn't seem like that's the theory of what's happening here, but what is the idea of what might be going on? Are there any theories being bounced around about exactly why there's so much smoke in this area?
Absolutely, and it really kind of, when you get down to it, it kind of goes down to one root thing, is that the rules are a mess in this country when it comes to disclosure for campaigns, for finances of political candidates. They're not consistent. They're not, in many cases, enforced. And as a result, we have a situation in this country when it comes to what a politician is doing with his or her money, either personally or through a campaign, the transparency, the level of transparency, and what they should or should not be doing, and whether they're going to get punished or not, is really all over the map. So what does that mean going forward? Well, it means that I think you can expect, for in particular, if there's a Democratic House and a Democratic Senate, and Joe Biden wins the presidency, that if you take Democrats at their word, that this is going to be a huge agenda item. And we may have some new laws in this country that directly hit on that issue of transparency in politics, transparency in public life, and financial issues involving members of Congress, political candidates, that really speak to the Donald Trump experience over the past 4 years, whether it's taxes, or one's businesses, or conflicts of interest, or be it what it may, that's going to be at front and center. They tried to put forward, Democrats, that is, something early in 2019. Of course, it's called HR1, a bill. But of course, it went nowhere because the Republican-controlled Senate was not going to have it. It will be a different ballgame in a major way, and Democrats telegraphed that. And another bill that they put forward just a couple of weeks ago, that this is going to be a priority. We will see if that happens. Stay tuned. And of course, we have that little election that we've got to go through first before any of this were to become a reality.
That technicality, it'll be over before you know it. Well, look, if that does become sort of one of the top line things that the Democrats are working on, you're certainly going to be busy for the next few years.
Don't doubt that.
But thank you. Exactly. Everybody, you need to go to Business Insider and follow Dave's work. Follow him on Twitter as well. Nobody follows the money like he does. Dave, as always, thank you for joining us. We really do appreciate it.
Hey, great to be with you. Thanks.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.